Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 4, House Divided. Aaron, are you a House Divided on this episode? Did you love it?
Kinda.
Did you hate it? Both?
So I love the show. I love the season. I like where they're going with it. I am increasingly distressed at how much suspension of disbelief some of the plot lines require. I wish they had either more time to lay out why they're plausible or why they're not, because I have like alarm bells going off on some of these plots and I'm looking for things that are not happening. But I like this theme of something that I've noticed when political tensions are high, is that it's really hard to be the cooler head that tries to prevail. Nobody wants to hear, you know, what if we take a step back from this moment and really think about things? Everyone wants to hear that the person that's standing in your way is the villain. And this is a unique inflection point where we all got to pull together and we all got to kick against the goads and we all got to storm the ramparts and we all got to find the villains and put them down. And you just see like 3-4 people get completely stomped in this kind of rising tide of passion. And it sucks and it's unfortunate, but it's also very real. So I really like that aspect of it. And there's not a single as opposed to years past where there's been like one plot line I'm like, oh my god, I can't even with this. There's none of that this year, but I don't know that you can walk off base and mount a rescue operation over some shiny rocks and not have the old man of Mars up your ass for it. I don't know that you can't, but I don't think the show has shown me the work that would convince me that it's possible. And then maybe there's other shoes to drop. Maybe we're, you know, a little distracted with the whole Sveta thing. There's a lot that I liked about this episode. I really like Danny and Ed finally having it out about this shit. Like her finally saying that I'm fucking right. Do I have to break my arm to get us out of a jam this time? Or are you going to fucking listen to me? I like that stuff. And I like what's going on with Margo, the crucible that she's going through. What do you think about this episode?
Yeah, I'm largely of the same opinion. I think there is some believability issues being raised in this episode, but we don't see the resolution to that, right? Like, there could be hell to pay coming back in this rover. I don't think we ever see them get back to base, do we?
You might be right.
I think we just see them driving back. So maybe
you think next episode's going to have like Palmer meeting Miles and Sam with a master of arms and arresting them like
a
bear
in
lock?
A large wrench ready to kick some ass. Yeah. I don't know. It's totally possible. I want to give it the benefit of the doubt temporarily because I think you could just about get away with using an old ass spacesuit and bribing some guy to let you out the airlock.
I was at the ragged edge of believability that you could rent
if they don't suffer consequences for that, that'll be rough.
Do you think anyone in the show listened to our podcast last year? Because I feel like the extended joke of Miles, like, this suit is dedicated to the amount of ragging we did on the fat Mega Man design of the Mark One Helios suits. Those things are still like, when I saw it busted out, you just laugh.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide which is worse, the suit here or the suit in Loki, and I'm totally not sure.
Well, I know that when we were covering it, we made like, because that was the joke of how bulky and dumb this suit is, you know, how impractical, and like it's 90% Helios, you know, like it's a bad spacesuit, man.
But aside from believability issues that may or may not be resolved next episode, I really like this episode. I thought, to kind of jump on, continue on from where what you said about the politics of it all, I think the way that the show is able to tie in the personal drama with the politics has been really expertly done. Like, Ed being personally attached to this astronaut who gets into real political hot water over the course of this episode was riveting to me. I think it had a lot of stakes, both for the nations involved, but also the people involved. And I think that's kind of the best of both worlds. I really enjoy an intellectually stimulating show, but also one that tugs on the heartstrings. And I think this did it really well.
Yeah, and the just being caught in that situation, like the Kafkaesque nature of what's going on in the Soviet Union is picked on the show is, I think, really, really great.
Yeah, for sure. Margot getting that inside view. And then you see kind of their resolution is not necessarily the cooler heads, but leverage, right? Like, we need to... I think what's going on here is the Soviets are trying to get some goodwill before some really bad news comes out. And so they reached this compromise that they never would have reached. They would have just pushed and pushed unless
it does feel
they had some
way.
Kind of fuck like, up on their end.
Yeah. If it hadn't been for Margot finding out that you guys single-handedly, because I do think that Ed's handshake is going to come out at some point.
Yeah.
Not like handshake like Danielle and Koosh did. I'm talking about his shaky hands. Yeah. His early stage. What did we decide it was? Parkinson's?
Potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think the hot theory is right now. I think that's going to come into play. But for right now, it feels like the Soviet Union is scared of losing face. So they're being a little, and they're getting most of what they want.
Yeah.
This is a very talented woman who was. Doing this kind of heroic thing for her country, and they don't like her because they don't like her politics, and they took her down multiple pegs, sending her home in disgrace to be stand trial in a foreign country for crimes against bozos.
You think we're going to see that trial, or is that going to be something that just takes place off screen?
No way. No, I don't know if we'll see it, but we're definitely going to see news clips, and we're going to see Ed's butt blood boiling, and we're going to see Mars, the wet bandit, get caught red, get his fingers burnt a little bit. And I do. I don't know if we'll actually see a full on court scene, because what would that look like? A Russian being tried in India?
I just wonder what the Russian influence is going to be here. Are they going to try and get. Really push whatever advantage they feel like they have here and really put her through the ringer, or are they just content to have her tried at all?
That the staff meeting she called made it seem like just getting her sent home and standing trial is that they're satisfied. It did feel like they're actually satisfied,
I think so. Yeah. She seems to be presiding over that group with a pretty heavy hand. So what she says goes, and she says, we got what we wanted out of this.
Yeah, we're very happy.
That's all tinted with we fucked up too, and the Americans are going to know that sooner or later. And this is kind of a goodwill-seeking measure, but...
I think so. That's the way I read it as well.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really good episode. With maybe one minor exception, but we'll see how that plays out next time.
Fair enough.
Maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre, We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More for All Mankind.
All right, we start off with Svetlana's team wanting to chat about politics of the situation back home with the Russian coup. But she just wants to get work done. So she goes out on the surface with one of her guys to do some stuff, and they end up getting into a fight on the surface of Mars when he calls her a traitor and his suit gets punctured. That's not good on Mars.
What's your stance on fighting words, Jim?
I'm with Svetlana here. I the way he, with this wry smile, like, he knows how provocative this is. He calls her a traitor. That's...
And a whore. Like, you know, spreading her legs for the West. Like, that's, like, in her, you know, like, that's, yeah, that's for sure. That's...
I felt like that was a less offensive thing to her. But when he calls her a traitor, she lost it, yeah.
Because that's the thing. It's like, I've certainly experienced people saying certain combinations of words that had me seeing red and considering rash action. But, like, they made it pretty clear this... What actually happened is she pushes him over, he rips the suit, and he goes into bariatric trauma. But what she tried to do is smash his windshield, right, his faceplate wide open with that piece of metal. Like, that's a fucking attempted murder. Like, it's not as accidental as what the official report's being writ up. And that's where it's like, man, that I thought that was such a great... Because, like, yeah, you don't really want a person in these kind of testy political times is going to try to murder someone on the surface of Mars. Even in a snap decision. And
well, it was a doomed attempt anyway. I don't know if you recognized it, but this thing's just a piece of IKEA kitchen storage. It's not like it's not going to break through the faceplate of a Martian suit.
I believe in bulletproof vests. Absolutely. I would not let someone shoot me from 10 foot away wearing a vest just because, your ribs are going to get a little hurt, you know? Like,
What about, like, with an IKEA-made bullet and an IKEA-made gun?
If IKEA flat-packed a rifle and wanted to shoot me with it, I would assume it's going to work because I've had nothing but good successes with IKEA stuff. So, yeah, I'd be terrified.
But after your first move, it will stop working. So Don't pack that thing up and move it.
I'm just saying, metal against glass with effectively a near vacuum, that's just not what you want to do. She got lucky he only ripped the suit, because I don't know if he explosively decontaminates. I was a little shocked that they don't have, maybe I'm used to the Expanse where it's like they all have these like self-sealing kits that they can fix their, you know, whatever. I'm actually surprised that they don't have some kind of way to field repair a minor rip like that. Like, I feel like Gorilla Glue would do it. Like, duct tape might do it. This isn't a high pressure situation. You're containing one atmosphere against like 0.01 atmosphere. This is not like an explosive decompression thing. I felt like that they're playing a little fast and loose with the science again, but
yeah, I mean, you would think they would be prepared for that scenario for sure.
Yeah, yeah. If not, it's like, because like, yeah, like, you know, especially now they're doing heavy industry and mining and like manufacturing and stuff, like you're going to get your shit ripped, man.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but
I mean, they should have known that their fight on the surface of Mars would result. I mean, she's trying to kill him, so of course she doesn't care about this, but a fight on the surface of Mars is definitely going to result in somebody getting their suit ripped.
Do you think it was a little bit of a failure of command for Danielle to put these people, like the put these, it'd be like, imagine if you had like a Republican Democrat post January 6th, mm-hmm. and you know, tensions are running high in the space station. Do you just send like two partisans out to kind of like, you know, like, why wouldn't you just pair like every Russian goes with an American, or at least keep the kind of like Soviet loyalists together? Maybe her thought is like, if I mix them, it'll keep things. I don't know. It just seems like in hindsight, maybe it was a slight command error.
It could almost certainly be chalked up as an error, I would think, but I don't know if I blame her too much. I mean, she's still very new to this job. She's still getting acclimated to the crew, the base, everything up here.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that she just doesn't know the people well enough yet. And if anybody
right hand...
is at fault here, it might be Ed for not suggesting this, you know?
True. Like, he's been the boots on the ground. He would know where those political divisions and...
He should, but it's also been shown that he's oblivious to the lower deck stuff, right? So he, like, going out with this Vasily guy, he doesn't know Vasily at all. Vasily is just another grunt to him.
Yeah, it's a damn shame, because I just kept on wondering, like Danielle does, like, if Kuz was still around, you know, he would know. Like, I don't think this mistake would be made the same way.
Uh-huh.
But then again, the asteroid, it's like, that's another thing. It's like, I wonder if like they had successfully captured that asteroid, if the coup would have been as successful, or if they'd even attempted it.
That's a good question. I don't know.
But
they attempted it in our world, and we've never captured an asteroid, so.
True. I say, maybe they were just waiting for, like, this is a, obviously the pressures around the coup were around since the 90s, because that's when the real life one happened. So like, maybe they were just waiting, like Gorbachev, just the first mistake or the first big political embarrassment, whatever, was going to be the thing that does him in. It's interesting. And but yeah, going forward, I don't even know, because it feels like Danny barely even has control of the station at this point. Like the Russians can just decide she's not in command anymore and change all the DOS prompts to Cyrillic, and then what do you do?
Yeah, if I'm her, first thing I'm doing is getting the base under my control now that there's some kind of truce again.
Yeah.
Because you can't have that happen. You can't, as the commander of the base, you can't have it just wrested from you at a moment's notice.
It feels like it's already too late, right? Like, once you have the rug pulled underneath, out from underneath your command that bad, and like it's precedent that, like, you, when you say it can't happen, well, what happens when the thing that can't happen happens?
Sure.
How
yeah.
do you put that like back and like, okay, for realsy now, Danielle's the supreme commander of Mars. You got to listen to what, like, I don't know. I feel like this is going to be a slow descent into some kind of hell. And
it does feel like it. Yeah. Like there's going to be a Cold War on Mars.
Yeah, and somehow some North Korean's wife's going to fit into it, and Miles' black market operation's going to be some pivotal thing, and...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
We'll see, man. Margo reports for her first day of work at Star City, and as she's walking through the building, she sees Rena getting briefed about the problem on Mars.
The demand of repercussions. I know sometimes we've made fun of it, but I want to take a point out to like applaud the makeup that they've got on Rin Schmidt, and also applaud her performance. Like, I think she is doing by far the best job of feeling like this is a character who is that old.
Yeah,
you know,
I think I agree.
Like, Kinnaman is like stooping, and he's got a serviceable makeup job, but like it's I think that Margot just effortlessly sails it. Like when she walks up and looks up at that and just has that like deep full body sigh, I just really buy it. And I was gonna say, as much as I find Margot kind of prickly and kind of hard to relate to, I think she's killing it this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think her performance as the old person is probably the best. Danielle's makeup, old person makeup, I think is the best. Granted, they don't have as much to do to her, but like,
yeah,
her makeup's really selling it for me.
You've got the younger, you got the black don't crack, but the sure. The hair, I think, is like perfect. It looks perfect.
Yeah. What do you think of the building here inside Star City? We're kind of like NASA, but it's much more.
It's evil NASA. It's socialist NASA.
Yeah, the colors are redder. It almost feels like the Mars version to NASA's moon or something.
Sure. A lot less, 100% less eagles, 1,000% mm-hmm. more hammer and sickles. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think I commented on the mosaic. Mm-hmm. I do think some of the Soviet civil works and like artistic works are pretty beautiful, even if they are kind of limited in their style. You know, there's a specific style guide the Soviet Union was kind of like enforcing on artists for years and years and years. But every once in a while you come up with some bangers.
Sure. Architecturally, no thank you, but. Sure, yeah, they have some interesting.
A lot of brutalists, but you know the Johnson Space Center is not exactly a prize.
Sure. All right, Danny and Ed back up on Mars. They're talking about the situation. Apparently, it's not uncommon for the Russians to be fighting among themselves, and Danny thinks that Svetlana's the problem and decides to take her off flight status. Ed's trying to defend her, but Danielle's mind is made up, and when she goes to tell her, Svetlana says, actually, don't worry about that. Don't worry about punishing me, because I've been recalled by Star City, and I'm leaving tomorrow to stand trial for my actions.
Salt and crimes against the Soviet patriot. I'll be damned. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this is where we find out that this Vasily guy is connected to the victorious members of the coup. So
I guess he was right. She is now a traitor.
I mean, what is loyalty to one's country actually at the end of the day? You know,
sure.
is it it's kissing the right toad, the son of the right toady's ass, or is it actually trying mm-hmm. to better your country? I would argue
is
for
it
the latter.
By the ideals of it, sure.
But clearly, and it's not just the Soviet. I mean. That's the thing that is interesting about that is I find with this Soviet stuff, it's a lot easier to see the splinter in one's adversary eye than the rafter in one's own, because like, I don't know. I think the episode makes that point pretty good when you've got like you got Marv, the wet bandit, trying to apply pressure to his counterpart in Russia, and she's able to deflect with enough whataboutism because, mm-hmm. you know, America isn't blameless, and they're, you know, like we like to be when we grandstand on the moral, on the stage of the, you know, our moral standing in the world is what I'm trying to say. But like, you can always point to like, well, yeah, what about that? Yeah, what about this? What about, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, our transition of power is just as smooth as yours. And, you know, you want us to uphold Al Gore stuff as much as we did this. And also like how you're acute, you know, it's like our trials are just as fair as yours. Right. And
of course, we don't play favorites with, you know, politicians' nephews, just like you don't. Right.
Right. And it's like it's not the same. I think that there's a difference in degree, if not kind. Mm-hmm. But that's a weak stage. That's a weak corner to fight out of on the international stage, you know. Well, sure, our crimes are less like they're just misdemeanors and yours are felonies. Like, OK, well, still breaking the law. Right. So we're just horse trading now.
mm-hmm. Hypocrisies on both sides. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good how they portray that stuff. Let's go over to Danielle sending a message back to NASA to say that she's unable to send Svetlana back. She won't do it. Unfortunately, their space agreement says that they're allowed to call their own cosmonauts back at any time. And the NASA executives get a briefing about the new head of the Soviet space program, Irina Morozova. And Hobson decides that he can just talk it out with her. I'll just go talk with her. No problem. I'm a negotiator. This would be like when I negotiated, you know, the rates of the bolts that went into the struts of the cars that we built over at Chrysler. It'll be fine.
I mean, I can see a guy like this that apparently negotiated a new contract with the UAW. I can, it's like, you know, I've done tough negotiations, and I like the Russians. They're direct, straightforward people, you know? There's no pretense to them. It's just he's dealt with the Russians in a season of Glasnost, and now he's about to get the real politic version. And it's funny to watch it. Yeah, it's funny to watch him kind of flail. And have absolutely no leverage against these Russians.
Yeah, that is a really fun scene. Because I don't know. I'm not sold on Hobson. I maybe understand some of his motivations. He's just trying to get a job done, and he's willing to compromise with whoever he needs to compromise with and make deals and stuff. But at the same time, he's not taking the hard line that I would wanted to take on the sense of exploration and the ideals of NASA, right? So I'm not totally sold on him being a great guy yet. So when he gets his ass kicked in that negotiation, I'm kind of okay with it.
And also Daniel Stern is really good at the comedic side of it. Like, you know, it's the perfect setup punchline. Like this self-assured guy being like, oh, yeah, you know, I like negotiating. I want to give these Russians a fair. And then him getting his balls completely broke. And then the payoff is him swearing at his, you know, getting chewed out by Al Gore and swearing at his stationary bicycle. And this is why you get Daniel Stern doing that, because he's just so... it's just so fun to watch bad things happen to.
Yeah, he totally is. Yeah, it worked in Home Alone. It works here.
It does. It really does.
And I also
you don't
think
hold
he's
it
good at the drama.
Him, right? Like, you know, you don't hate Marv from Home Alone. You might be scared a little bit of Harry, but Marv? Nah, he's a goofball.
Even when he wants to murder children, he's still funny and likable.
I don't think he'd go through
a hard thing to pull
Harry
off.
Would go through it. I don't think Marv would. I don't think Marv would actually kill Kevin if he got him, like, you know, his hands on his neck. I'd be like, I can't kill it. But, you know, that's just my read of him.
Okay. I don't know. We'll see how this all plays out here in a bit. But I think he's doing a great job on the dramatic side, too. Yes, he's funny, but I think he's also bringing, like, a serious tone to it. Needs to, that is really working for me.
I'm just glad he's got that brush to paint with, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Ilya and Miles going over the new orders for their illegal trade up in Happy Valley. Miles asks how the special request form from Lee is going. Ilya's associate is working on it, apparently, but there's not much to report yet. Miles asks whether they could sell things from up here, down on Earth, maybe expand their trade a little, and says he plays this message from his wife about how she sold the rock from Mars that he gave to his daughter. $5,000. It's a pretty good chunk of change. He says maybe we can replicate that whole bunch. And Ilya's like, nope, I don't want to get more people involved. I don't want to take on more risk. And Miles is like, oh, yeah, I understand.
This is going to be the downfall of their organization, isn't it?
100%. Ilya's done. I knew this was happening. As soon as Miles got that glint in his eye when he was talking with Sam about, oh, what can I do to make more money here? And he eyed Ilya. I'm like, it's the end. He's done.
It seems like it's like a recurring thing, and he kind of organized crime. And this is what it is. This is organized crime, like by definition.
Yep.
That, like, the underlings who are doing all the work and paying up all the money, like, you know what, boss? There's a lot of money in that white powder. Yeah, but we start slinging that dope, it's going to get all kinds of heat on us, and there's going to be and it's the same old story. It's like you're trying to tell a person, you know, who have you trained that there is no lines, you know? Like, they're just, everything is just kind of gray, and you can kind of color outside of them. Suddenly, oh, no, this is a line. This is a line we can't cross for money. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to go about as well for Ilya as it did for the old man in Godfather. Stay away from the orange stands, Ilya. They're nothing good's going to happen at the orange stands.
Is there a reason that NASA, that the M7 can't bring up fungal creams and energy bars and pornography and beef jerky? Because, like, clearly the astronauts want it, and it's not a problem getting it up there. They've got the Delta V. They can do it. Why are they not providing those services?
The reason black markets exist is to get either more variety or to lower costs, because maybe Helios thinks that fungal cream is worth $50 a tube because they're paying the mm-hmm. per ounce fee to ship it over there, and Ilya can be like, I can throw an extra 8 ounces in this crate and no one's going to notice, and I can sell it for 20.
Yeah, he can, like, just piggyback on the cost of them getting it to Mars.
Exactly. So I think it's one of those things where it's like they are subsidizing the savings by just not paying for the transportation cost. You know, it's like whatever you can get in extra. And I wonder what would be the limit to that. Like, at some point, you would be putting so much extra weight if you start shipping rocks that you might unbalance something.
If you think there's underwear in this crate and it's actually Mars rocks.
Yeah, like you think that thing is loaded with 5,000 kilograms and it's actually loaded with 6,000 because, you know, like I said, instead of packaged underwear, you've got like a bag of rocks. Like, I don't know. Like, Delta V calculations don't usually have like a huge margin of, we're gonna put the 20% extra fuel on this rocket because who knows what could happen, right? Hell no, yeah. You're not going to do that. It could be dangerous. Could definitely be dangerous.
Yeah, curious to see how long Ilya can fly under the radar here, because I think Miles is about to blow up his spot.
Well, the bigger problem, I think, is that, like, okay, let's play this out. Let's say that you're going to have a regular stream of rocks that are going to make for $5,000 and they're going to start making jewelry. This jewelry is popular. Why is it going to be popular? It's going to be popular because it's got Martian gemstones in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the hell are these Martian gemstones coming from? Like, it's almost an investigation that asks to be launched because, like, NASA's not doing it. Russia's not doing it. Where the fuck are these rocks coming from?
I mean, the idea would be you get in, you make your money, and you get out. But that's never how it goes. That's never how it goes. You get in, you make as much money as possible till you get caught, and then you're done.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
And there's also, like, once as the market ramps up and demands, like, the prices are going to fall, like, you sell your first rock for $5,000. And your second, third rock, but your 10th rock, your 100th rock.
I've seen what happened with diamonds, and those are certainly less scarce than Mars rocks. So
Miles is going to start a family that hoards Martian rocks and carefully launches them and makes arguments that the exact same volcanic rock on Earth is that shit. That's a shit rock. That's a shit rock. That you want the rock that got melted on Mars. Obviously, it can be done.
It worked for he's the Martian Zales. He's Martian Tiffany or something.
I don't know that the younger generations are down with, you know, the whole 2 month salary for a fucking piece of rock that came from the Earth when it's not even the rarest gemstone. It's arguably not the prettiest gemstone, and it's chemically indistinguishable from a gemstone you can make in the lab be perfect for a tenth cost. Like, I feel like I see more and more young people eschewing that, getting like engagement rings with like emeralds or topazes and different types of settings and just anything but worshiping at the altar of De Beers. And good on them, because it's super dumb and silly, but also we're humans and we do lots of dumb, silly stuff.
Also, we haven't brought Mars rocks back yet to start putting on our rings. I feel like that would extend the jewelry industry another at least 10 years, but what do I know?
I'm sure he loves you, but does he Martian rock love you?
Sure.
I mean, that's a question would gnaw on the back of my mind if I was getting an engagement ring in the year 2002 and the For All Mankind timeline.
Did we see the size of the rock that he sent back? I remember the meatloaf brick, but I don't remember seeing the rock.
I thought his wife held it up or something. Because you're saying she sold it.
No, she had already sold it.
She did sell it? I thought she was the...
Yeah,
because
she apologized at the very beginning. She was like, don't get mad, but here's what happened.
Oh, okay, and they need the money. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean, judging by the other rocks he got, they look like they're potato size.
Right.
Yeah.
So $5,000 for that, I guess wholesale, it's not amazing. That's not great, especially when you're shipping it from Mars.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You couldn't, you're right, you couldn't do that for that price if you had to pay for the cost.
You have to gray market the Delta V or it's just not going to work,
Anyway. Jewelry logistics. Let's move on.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad. Touchdown, and we're back.
Hobson calls Irina to negotiate over Svetlana. This is a scene where he gets his ass kicked, rhetorically. She takes the hard line that Svetlana broke Soviet law.
I'm sorry. Can we go back and there's one other thing I want to talk about. I got they name checked the North Korean's wife again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And no one is saying what he wants is impossible. Like Miles is
but
not
no one's
like
saying way, still what exactly he wants when he means when he says his wife. What does he mean?
There's a way you can talk about when you are in a criminal organized that you're trying to string someone along and delay the inevitable. Like there's a way you talk about this way. That's not the way they're talking about this. They're talking about a way that's a tough but not intractable situation. Is it possible his wife is dead and cremated, and what he wants is her urn?
Sure.
That's the only thing that fucking makes sense. I do not, I don't buy that just getting him a phone call would be this fucking hard. Like literally, if like North Korea doesn't let them do it, all they have to do is sneak him into one of their dorm rooms and let him use the thing. I mean, I guess getting it to her would be the problem because.
Yeah.
But still, it's like that seems like a problem that's either like there's just no fucking way. How am I going to get someone in North Korea?
Yeah.
How would I even approach someone in North Korea to allow that communication to take place? But if if there's a physical object that it weighs a few kilograms that would represent like I just wonder if she's dead and he wants.
They're currently putting her through a space training program. And in 6 weeks' time, she'll be certified to go up, and she can just be... I mean, look at Dev. Dev's saying later in this episode, we want anybody who wants to make the journey to come up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could literally get Helios to bring her up if they could somehow communicate with her.
Gotta get her out of the country, you know? My new hot theory is that she died, and he misses her, and he's... because my headcanon also says he's never been off Mars.
Wasn't there that photo of the, was that taken on Mars or was that photo when they came back? I thought
that
photo.
Was pre...
Well, no, I think it was after.
Oh,
like,
right,
when
he
they,
came
when
back.
Kelly...
That's right.
Yeah.
Or did he come back? Because Danny was saying like, "Oh, hey, it's Lee." But did they establish in that scene that he had just recently come back to? Shit, I wasn't prepared to have this kind of this conversation, or I would have double checked it. But like, yeah, obviously,
I thought he was in the photograph they took when the astronauts got back to Earth.
Yeah.
So
if you're not in the middle of recording a podcast and you can find this out, fam@baldmove.com. I'll probably look it up between now and next week. But yeah, I do wonder because it seemed like they're acting like this is a thing they can do, and none of the other things that I'm thinking of seem to math out. So,
no, I think that's a good possibility that they're just trying to get her ashes up there.
Did Gene Roddenberry? Where
does he put
Gene Roddenberry?
Like, he's so strictly monitored over in the Korean section. I wouldn't think he would have a place to, behind the fridge. I guess he's gonna wheel the fridge out, stick her ashes back there where the still part was. The thermostat.
It's something that's like an urn is small enough. You could probably kind of hide it. And like, I think there are a lot more. I actually have no idea about North Korean culture, but like, it seems like there's a little bit more kind of like ancestor shrine type of things going on in like Japan and China. I assume Korea. And maybe he's like, you know, that traditionalist, and he wants to like just have a little shrine for her.
Could be.
It's like,
yeah.
But then again, yeah, it's like that's even harder to find. But it might be permitted, but like, you know, they're not going to be happy about the fact that it just shows up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get this here?
Yeah. And I can't imagine North Korea to want to pay the tens of thousands of dollars it would probably cost to transport that thing.
All right, compress her ashes into a diamond.
There you go.
That you can then wear as a ring.
That then gets lost on the base. Miles finds it, thinks it's a pretty rock.
Ships it back home and
they sell it. The circle of life.
Good Lord. All right, we got to move on.
Yes, let's do it.
Hobson's going to get his ass kicked in this scene by Irina because they're negotiating over Svetlana. She takes the hard line that Svetlana broke Soviet law and they have the right to recall her. And the discussion just goes totally off the rails for Hobson real quick. And it ends with Irina declaring that they will have to reconsider their participation in the M7. He might have just broke up the first joint venture in space. Well, yeah, I guess not the first, the second.
Yeah, and like this feels very much the kind of frustration you get when you deal with like the Soviet Union when it's in its secretive stage, where it's like they will just tell you, like they will have no compunction about lying, no compunction about accusing you of, like this is, yeah, gaslighting and projection and all that stuff. And again, not to say that U.S. statecraft is blameless in this, but I think it's safe to say it's on a whole other level when you have an authoritarian regime, because they can just, you know, I mean, we've all read 1984, right?
Sure.
You're just constantly being gaslit on like a national, international level.
Yeah, there are some almost comedic level things that Irina will say about her people later in this episode that I want to point out. That will be fun to talk about. That goes right into that.
It does seem like cognitive dissonance is something that's like baked into Russian culture, going back from the Tsar, you know, peasantry era of like where you could just have random pogroms and purges, and you know, it doesn't help to complain, it doesn't help the revolt. It's just like you have to be able to hold the ideal that, you know, everything's fine even though it's not. And
then guys like Vasily here on the surface of Mars will start to romanticize that time in Russian history.
I thought that was good too. Like he's, you know, the whole like, oh, we need a strong leader like Stalin. Oh, the guy that drug, you know, millions out in the forest and shot him. Oh, he won the patriotic war. No, he threw literally millions and millions of Russian lives into a grinder, and that's what won the patriotic war. You just go back and forth, and like even here, it's a microcosm with he's like, you know, yeah, that we did get that we did reach that agreement with the government of Gorbachev. And she's like, oh, well, does that mean we don't have to do anything that Ellen negotiated because now Al's in the office? And he's like, well, that's not the same because we had a election and an orderly transfer of power and you just had a fucking coup. But like as he's saying it, he can tell that this is not like, well, how do you, you know, there's not a judge.
I agree
here.
With him, but you can't reason with that. Yeah, it's
there's not an impartial judge that's going to be like, it's like you, it's everyone's getting away with what they think they can get away with on the world stage. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the M7 is roughly divided in half. Like there are three on the that are under the sway of the Soviets and three that are sort of with America here or on this
like
side
India
of the issue. And then India
is
sitting in the
kind
middle
of the
neutral.
Wild card. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which will be important later.
You've got,
so.
I saw the M7. It's United States. It's Japan. Apparently the entire European Space Association. But that might make sense that like the when did the European
the EU?
Yeah, when did that form? Like
was that in the 90s? I honestly don't know.
It might be because like God, I'm so old. I'm trying to think like when did Jay-Z start rapping about the Euro? It's like early 2000s, right? So, but even if you told me like it's a little early, I would believe in this timeline that it is a little early. So you've got Japan, America, and the EU. Then you've got I saw the flags for Russia, China, and the North Korea. Mm-hmm. And then I'm assuming India would be kind of like not exactly aligned with the West or the East. So they're kind of like a good neutral swing, you know, because they got like they got beef with the West because of the colonial misrule.
But they're also capitalists.
They're also super capitalist and want to compete on the world stage. So they're not down. So they're probably really good, honest brokers. They're probably a really good impartial judge for these type of situations.
Yeah. In this scenario, for sure.
But I wonder if they have the power to, like, if they came up with like a binding, you know, like let's say that they find Sveta innocent of trying to kill the, you know, what's his face, Vasily or whatever. Does Russia let it go? Does Russia respect that? Or does Russia put a shit ton of pressure on India to cave in, you know?
I expect the latter, but we'll see.
According to the Wet Bandit, the State Department, Danielle, the State Department is very confident that they can, they've sealed off all avenues of retribution, but... What if the shuttle with Svetlana just explodes?
Oh my God.
On the way back. Like, they're
like,
thinking
you're thinking sabotage
three moves
or?
Ahead. Yeah, we're playing checkers here. They're just playing chess.
Oh,
fuck
boy.
You, checkmate. Yeah.
That would be exciting.
God, how many lives would they sacrifice to be that petty?
It would give Ed just an instant heart attack. I mean,
how many of those transports do they have? Those reconverted hotel transports?
I don't know. I don't know.
Me either.
I'm only familiar with the Phoenix and
that's like the space station now. They actually have those kind of like long skinny transports that they're using with the fusion drives now. So
that probably wouldn't
be a big deal. So they probably have more than one, but still, I don't know. Like I'm curious to see where this goes.
All right. Marga's in a meeting of the higher-ups here at Roscosmos. They're discussing what to do about Svetlana. Irina declares that they will test whether they can still trust the Americans. And they hand out a report on the Kronos accident, and Marga's given a copy, and she takes that report back to her office and gives it a look over.
I think this is another scene that really shows how scary it can be in an environment where you can't agree on the truth, because, like, what is the play? You see one guy... who's trying to be the cooler head, and he's trying to, like, you know, do we really want to blow up all this international cooperation over pretty minor dust? He gets completely shut down. Mm-hmm. And he's preceded by the guy who gets turned over to the KGP, who is like towing the party line. He's like, yes, we should, you know, this is an outrage. We should get justice. He's saying all the right things and even kind of doing the right things. Like, I think the Soviet Union, if he had asked, like, hey, do you want me to be forthright with these numbers? Should I cook the books? They'd be like, cook them, comrade. But now, so it's like there's no safe ground to stand on.
Yeah, no. And this scene just, like, it points out the hypocrisy of the scene right before it, right? When she's like, oh, no, we don't give favoritism to anyone just like you don't, when she's on the call with Hobson. And then in this scene, she specifically calls out, this is the nephew of a big wig in the Politburo. So, like, it's on the face of it ridiculous, everything she's saying. And that just, like, enhances the atmosphere of not knowing. And she's later in the episode, she's saying, like, all our people, when she congratulates Margo on finding this flaw and bringing it to her attention. She's like, all of our people are jumping at shadows, but you're different. And I'm like, well, why do you think that fucking is?
Right.
It's because of your policies. It's because of the way you treat information and people. I mean, you're causing that. You are degrading your own government by these by treating everyone the way you're treating them.
No, it's like Chernobyl, you know, that every lie told incurs a debt to the truth, and that debt will eventually get paid, and it'll get paid in economic problems, it'll get paid in lives lost, it'll get paid in freedoms eroded, and it's not a Soviet thing. Like, this is true of our fucking country, you know? Like, we get a little loosey-goosey with what's real and what's not, and we start,
we're,
like...
we're paying those costs right now.
We sure as fuck are. The whole... arguably, a lot of the world. And, you know, the sad thing about that is probably 10% of the world made the decisions that got the whole world into the bind it's in. But what are you going to do? But it is. It's like an absolute... And it's like, how certain that you're not already making someone who's going to jump at shadows? You just last episode... blew someone's brains out in this woman's face, put her in a stress position, kidnapped her, bagged her, took her into a Black Forest retreat, and then it's like, oh, you're going to be my lapdog. Like, and this episode, she sees someone, she did a job, and she was the henchman, and this guy got bagged up. And like, how long is it going to be before Margo's jumping at Shadows? Because that's just like, that's just a human response to this insanity, right?
I would think it would be immediately.
Yeah, like you, no matter, I mean, that's like the, you know, the, that's what everybody tries to get into, those contradictions, that cognitive dissonance you have to hold. It's like where you're no longer trying to find out what's actually true. You're trying to triangulate to a position where you can do the best job you can without getting your family disappeared. And that's not a great way to explore space.
When she says we need to figure out whether we can still trust the Americans, is she talking about going over this report and finding out if the Americans did something that fucked up the mission, or is she talking about something deeper that they're currently engaged in?
I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't certain how those points connected.
I thought it was just cover up for this mission. But, you know, and it's obvious if they found out something on the American side, they would use that to the hilt. And I'm also curious to see, now that they know about the flaw, like, how is that going to actually be surfaced to the world? Is it something that the Soviet Union is going to, like, oh gosh, looks like we double checked our numbers, turns out we made a mistake here? Or are they going to do a better job of hiding it, or actually fabricate some of the data so it matches up, or, you know, because no one's seen this report except for internally. Yeah, I'm very curious to see how, because I doubt that they're just going to go and be like, whoops, our bad. We fucked up the thing and caused our own hero to be killed and one of your guys. You know, I don't think it's going to go down that way.
Yeah. Yeah, probably not. Margo is in her office looking over this report, and I couldn't help but notice she's pulling out some kind of slide rule apparatus out of
a case.
Is
that still Von Braun's slide rule that he gave her?
It might be, but my God, lady, it isn't 1960 anymore. Have a computer do your calculations for you. Come on.
She's playing jazz. And I guess that there are certain types of calculations where an abacus and a slide rule will whip ass. I mean, I don't know nowadays when you can just like...
Really?
But like, I heard that like up until... Certainly when I was going through high school and like college age, which would be about this era, that like, yeah, if you were really good at slide rule and about you could out computate, you know, one on one certain machines. So I thought it was cool. I thought like it, like her doing that and the jazz playing in the background really brought us back like season one Margo, you know?
Yeah.
Who faced a lot of internal conflicts, you know, like coming face to face with Von Braun's participation in the Nazi regime. And
well, it's a little bit more direct later in the episode where she finds out that this guy gets disappeared by the KGB.
Right.
Because she finds out that it's a mentor of somebody, which didn't that happen to her mentor? It's like
pretty much
practically did. Yeah.
And it's like he didn't get disappeared to a labor camp, but he got publicly disgraced and blacklisted. And it's like, again, differences in degree, but certainly not differences in kind.
For sure. All right, the lower decks discuss the Russian surface of Mars fight. They think that Svetlana's just going to get a slap on the wrist because she's part of the upper deckers. Miles comes in and calls Sam away to ask about this rock, and he asks her to take him out to get some more of them so that he can sell them, and she turns him down.
Rich, another one of the cooler heads that gets squashed this episode. He tries to... come on, you know, and no one's having it. He's being a class traitor is the term here.
Yeah, I mean, it's the second time that the lower decks have got overlooked in a catastrophe here, and I think I understand why they're angry. I do.
And the thing is, like, that's the thing that I've come to appreciate in my middle age is that the thing that incites like the big cook-off is never the most worthy, you know, like George Floyd getting killed by that cop. if it was just out of blue, like if some cop put his knee on someone's neck and that was just like some kind of isolated incident, we probably don't have like the largest scale protests and riots in this country seen in like a generation. It's just like you don't see all the pebbles that fell before the avalanche happens, right? So it's like
if straw on the camel's back.
Yeah, if Helios had treated their employees better, if the Upper Decks had, you know, shared the same kind of like sentiment to the Lower Decks crews they do their own peers, if, you know, they weren't bait and switched, like you wouldn't, you know, nobody would probably bat an eye that some asshole got what's coming to him on the surface of Mars. You know, he took his chances, takes the swings, he's in a hyperbaric chamber. Mm-hmm. But it's just the latest outrage in their mind. And they're going to get less and less rational every single time an outrage happens. And it's inevitable. You know, that's like the old quote that everybody drags out from Martin Luther King. The violence is the language. Rioting is the language of the unheard. Like, if you actually address these problems any step away, you wouldn't have these problems. But...
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it's interesting. And, like, how frustrating it is to be Sam because... She comes a little bit, she comes across like she's just extremely frustrated because she can't even amongst her own people get agreement on what's going on. And then I think she sees Miles as kind of a kindred spirit, but he doesn't give a shit about the political angle, man. Yeah. It's all about his pocketbook. And that's disappointing.
Yeah, it's himself over others. And I feel like she's looking for a little more solidarity from her friends here.
And like even now with Miles is like, you know, she's kind of aided and abetted his, you know, trying to stick it to get the man. And but now he's like the Frankenstein monster's escape from the lab, because I think she thought maybe she had a little control over him. Like, well, he can't get a spacesuit. He can't do that. But now he's now getting himself in trouble. She's having to go out of her way to bail him out. I feel bad for Sam.
Like, yeah, I do wonder if she's going to get caught up in this rock plot and taken down too, along with Ilya.
Jesus, what if Ilya and Miles sell her down the river to like avoid, how dark are they going to get with the crime politics this season?
Right. They get the rover logs out and they're like, yeah, she went out in the rover to this site. I mean, she must have been gathering rocks to send back, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I could see it.
It's like when they made Tony's uncle the godfather in Sopranos. Like, oh, yeah, we're getting it. We Sam's cracking a whip. Sam's the one that gets all of our RVs going for the Martian. Yeah, I can see it. I don't know if Miles is that big of an asshole, but I'm starting to do the math and big asshole coefficient in the calculations I'm finding.
Totally. Very selfish.
Yeah.
All right, Margot works late. She strolls the nearly empty building there at Star City and runs into a woman named Tatiana, who helps her get a coffee from the vending machine. And in return, Margot helps her with some rocket science, like you do. That might be the lowest rate she's ever gotten for doing rocket science. This is essentially the Russian equivalent of a quarter.
And it's not even that. It's a plugged nickel.
Yeah.
It's not even 2 cents. It's a washer. Here's a penny for your thoughts. It's not even legal tender.
If we do not see... by the end of this season, some poor schmuck just shatter one of these chairs, I'm going to be pissed off. Because how many times has she done this? It can't be the first time.
Yeah.
Because she knows exactly where to go for these washers. None of these chairs have washers anymore.
Well, and that's another problem that was like in like late stage communism, you know, that like the people have done without for so long that they just start cannibalizing the things and they start trimming things off because people got to live. At the end of the day, people got to fucking live.
And they'll find a way. Life finds a way.
And you roll tanks down the assembly line that, you know, supposed to have 12 inches of steel plating and they only have 10 for some reason. And, you know, you got 1,000 tanks you think are in your reserve battalion and people have been starting them every month and lubricating them. And it turns out half of them are missing their transmissions. And, gee whiz, how'd that happen? It's like, you know, as much as we talk about late stage capitalism, and it's a fucking nightmare. God, I hate fucking doing this show because I feel like I'm preemptively trying to protect against the old fucks I know listen to this show. They're all like got raised on fucking Carthyism, and I'm also bracing for the 20-somethings with the fucking hammer and sickles in their Twitter bios.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we just take the best from all the systems, man? Sure. Why does it have to be all or nothing? We need fucking unironic Marxist-Leninism. We need Lenin to come out of his tomb like the fucking Simpsons and set things. Or why do we feel like we need, like, Jesus Christ, robber baron capitalism? My God. My mm-hmm. God. Especially when there's like 5 or 6 countries that are doing it right on the money, it feels like. Just copy their homework, people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we have examples. You know what? I was kind of waffling on whether Svetlana was actually a traitor, whether she'd be labeled a traitor now. There is a traitor in the midst, though, here in the Soviet Empire.
Oh, yeah?
And it's the person who decided to make the employees pay for coffee at Star City. Like, there is no faster way to sabotage your space program than forcing engineers to pay for coffee.
Let me get this straight.
With coins.
Let me get this straight. You don't pay for healthcare. You don't pay for lodging. You're paying for coffee?
Crazy. Crazy.
You can't get the go-go juice in a state facility, state-run facility, for free?
Yeah.
There's your productivity problem, comrade.
This is why we actually, in the real world, beat them to the moon. Because they were not paying for the coffee for their employees.
Yeah. One of the
think Ed's ever paid for a cup of coffee, even on Mars? Fuck no. He's getting his coffee for free.
No, I don't think they take the Tang and the coffee out of the astronaut's paycheck.
I don't think so.
But also, look up how much an astronaut gets paid. It's kind of wild.
Is it like 40K or something?
It's not great. No, it's better than that. But it's like, how much do you think an astronaut should get paid? And like, as a software engineer in the fucking Midwest, I made more. Okay.
Oh, that's... Jesus. No. I was going to say 200K at least.
No. What do you think? You think it gets paid as well as a U.S. president? Although I do think they increased that to the princely sum of $400,000 in my living memory. But yeah, they have. It's but he probably gets free coffee. You're right.
Yeah, makes up for it.
Plus, I think astronauts do all right. Speaking engagements, you know. Sponsorships, book writing, podcast appearances. They got ways to make money.
Oh, yeah, those lucrative podcast appearances. So the thing here is that Margo is bonding with somebody, right? And that's later just going to be a dagger in her heart at the end of the episode.
I like I said, I've read enough Tom Clancy that I'm fully expecting this is a KGB fucking psyop to see if Margo's actually been operated and conditioned into loyalty or not, you know?
Yeah, I almost want to believe that they knew about the flaw in the bolts and this is all a ruse to test Margo. Disappearing, this dude isn't real. This woman crying over her disappeared husband or fiance or whatever isn't real. I'm looking for the angles here, but I'll take it at face value for now.
That no one has point, like, how are they keeping Margo under wraps? If everyone knows who she is and what she's there for, like, seems like the odds just keep going up and up and up. The United States is going to get wise that they kidnapped / liberated one of their citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But and no one talks about it. No one talks about what seems to me an apparent danger there.
Yeah.
Is that an overlooking or is that just like they'd be stating the obvious?
That's a good question. Because I don't even see the elements of monitoring her here.
Yeah. Like,
I'm certain there are cameras throughout this building. They know what goes on in the building.
Sure.
But
she doesn't spend the night there like she used to. And I kind of thought like we'd open this with her like kind of having a cell there that she's just kind of kept and monitored 24/7. But I understand that like communications internally and especially externally in the Soviet Union were highly monitored. But I'm just saying that like hundreds of people know about Margo in a way that probably didn't 6 months ago. And I think that's eventually going to be a plot point, but it seems like a stupid one that the Russians are just walking right into.
Yeah, they're definitely raising the risk on that coming out. So apparently up at Happy Valley, the language on the computer systems has been changed to some Cyrillic alphabet. And Danielle asks why. And she's told by one of the Soviet techs that it's because the Soviet Union no longer recognizes her as commander of the station. So Danielle meets with her team to discuss the problem. and Ed decides, okay, we're going to put some security on Svetlana's quarters to protect her, and orders a security sweep of the entire base.
You know, as much as we're talking about the Star Trek of it all, this felt so fucking Star Trek. This feels like Picard taking his team to the ready room and getting the senior staff involved and going around, what are the solutions? And like, like Ed really felt like Riker with, like, you know, he's enforcing Ed, Danny's will, but also, hey, it is smart to put it, to put a guard on her door and do a security sweep to make sure there's no other surprises. Like, I did. I felt like I was, this is the ready room, man.
This is the episode where the nanobots take over the Enterprise's computer, right?
Yeah,
piece
right.
by piece. And they're like, well, the language has changed. Shit. What do we do about this, guys?
Fleshy bags of mostly water. Yeah, that's what that's when Kelly finds the microbial life. You know, that's how it's going to go down.
Totally. Yep.
They're going to infect the Martian computers and hold the biologicals hostage.
Mm-hmm. They're just robots from the robot creations from the Venetian colonies. We just haven't seen them yet.
Yeah.
Next season.
Oh, yeah. Full scale Venus Martian war. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Cold War proxy war of our lifetime.
This is a huge problem, though. I'm shocked that they don't have anybody who can read the Cyrillic language here on the NASA team, right?
Is that a little bit of commentary about how, like, the Americans are kind of arrogantly, like, because every single Russian there speaks fluent English.
Uh-huh. And I believe they could read it,
and
too.
And none of these motherfuckers can, like, I'm sure not none is strong, but enough of the NASA people cannot speak or read Russian to where, because I don't think that's true in the International Space Station. I'm pretty sure that, like, a requirement to go up there is you have to be able to be fluent in, like, English and Russian, because there is shit labeled in Cyrillic up there. Because it was made in Russia. Mm-hmm. I think that's the case, but I do think, like, either way, they're doing a little bit of commentary about the passive arrogance of the Americans, of just like, well, of course it's going to be this way. Of course you're going to bend over backwards to cater to our preferences, because we're not going to learn your, you're going to learn your fucking weirdo mongrel language with your weird alphabet. Get the fuck out of here. Our alphabet was handed down to us by the Greco-Romans, baby.
Mm-hmm.
We inherited civilization from the greats that made, like, I feels like that's a little bit what they're going with.
And you think Ed would know better after how important it became that he spoke Korean, just like happened to speak Korean, right?
A little bit of Korean, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, not great. But you would think he would want somebody up there to be able to
translate. You know, that's actually a good point, because that was a great moment. Like, the whole, like, oh, shit, I actually can speak enough Korean to make this not be a disaster. Like,
yeah.
You know, maybe the old man of Mars.
Shoot another man in space or something.
Yeah, maybe in the last 10 years, he, like, picks up a Rosetta Stone and starts learning some Russian. I don't know.
Even if it's not him. Even if just, like, I want somebody here who speaks this language.
Yeah.
In case communication does break down. We need that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel you on that.
But yeah, I mean, it could just be arrogance, like expectations.
And
from
again,
Americans,
it's not arrogance, like arch steepled fingers, Mr. It's more of just like the expectation that it's going to conform to us and we're not going to do it the other way.
Yeah.
Because like the language flipping randomly to your partner nation's mother tongue should not be a base disaster, I would say.
You
it really
hope.
Shouldn't.
Yeah.
That's a security risk. That's a national security risk if you let that happen.
Absolutely. I wonder if the UI changed at all. Cuz like if I'm a tech up there and I've been trained on all this and I'm working on it day to day, I could just about do my job without being able to read the prompts.
True.
Unless the UI changed around, unless things moved.
Yeah, maybe. But then again, like, I think I could navigate one or two menus deep, but you get in third and fourth menu, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then like reading values and like warning messages and stuff, it might be tough.
Yeah, could be. And here we're supposed to really notice that, you know, Ed is very protective of Svetlana, right? He's putting he's the one who suggests putting security on her quarters because he's worried about her safety.
As light a touch as they put on that burgeoning relationship, I was kind of surprised that they leaned way into it. But I thought they did too, especially when, like, I think you're supposed to understand that months jump by between episodes in a lot of cases, unless there's an obvious thing that says, no, this, but I think the, and there's probably the passage of time, like they're mentioning, Yeah, I think this is late 2002, right? We're not quite to 2003, like getting to be Christmas time.
Yeah, I think all the stuff that like Dev is just now the CEO of Helios, right? He's interviewed and the questions aren't like, how did you become the CEO again, right? That's all in the past. So a while has happened, transpired here.
But yeah, the fact that it seems like they were getting to be important in each other's lives, and the whole shared joint is the thing that pushed them into perhaps intimacy.
Oh yeah, and they've absolutely hotboxed Ed's quarters.
I believe
a few
so.
Times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done a Jack and Rose in a moon buggy, sweaty palm print on the
Totally. The great thing about smoking weed at a moon base is that when your parents walk in, you can just evacuate all the air to the surface of Mars, and they can't smell a damn thing.
It's arguably that if you smoke up in a airlock and invent it, you're terraforming.
Sure.
One
kind of life lives
on.
We talked about this last time. Now the surface of Mars is just going to be weed smoke.
Uh huh. What one lungful of THC at a time, slowly terraforming the planet.
What life forms? What does that do to the human physiology? What life forms survive in a 100% THC atmosphere?
Mm-hmm.
Venetians. That's who.
It's going to be nuts. He's going to have a planet that not but Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg can rule over. Which honestly, most base form of government you could devise. I would abide under that triumvirate rule.
Mm-hmm. I'm in.
President Cheech had the following announcement after
consulting with his cabinet, Snoop.
The concern that the Martian atmosphere has dropped from 30% to 29% THC.
No, Jesus.
Takes answers from an outrage press.
Can 29% even sustain a Snoop?
I don't know. Maybe that's why he gave up. He's just going on a tolerance break. It's you have to quit. He has to quit weed for like 5 years to even feel anything at this point.
Yeah. You're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back. Hi Bob. Welcome back to more For All Mankind. All right, let's go over to Hobson getting an earful from the president about the international situation. He promises to fix it, but it ends up immediately on TV.
Yeah.
I don't think this is what the president wanted. I think he's getting the shit he was hoping he wouldn't get.
Also, I mean, I think this is another critique of the American system, too, is like this guy is being drug over to Kohl's for something he had no control over. Like, if Al's going to be pissed, like he should have been. Well, but I think he should be pissed at himself because they established that the CIA had credible warnings that there was a potential coup. And this motherfucker in this intense environment is crowing on the national stage that the Cold War is over, and they're more of a partner than they ever became in this timeline. But the idea is kind of like, yeah, and we won. You've got we don't have any Borch stands in America, but you got KFC and McDonald's. We kind of won, and that had to put a lot of pressure on the hardliners. You know, it's like now or never, right?
Yeah.
Sure. But here's Al calling and telling this guy that you got to fix fucking world peace so I don't look bad for the elections. That's kind of fucked up too. That's not a way to run a government.
He could have cut that off at the pass by not being grandstanding, I guess.
He has to grandstand because that's how the American politics stuff works, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like a president just puts his hands down or head down and just gets the work done and never has a press release, never pats himself, never self-aggrandized. That's a person who's not going to make it the next 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get your name out there.
Yeah. So
it's true. Our system has problems for sure. All right. Speaking of interviews on TV, Dev is interviewed about it, and he says it's up to the governments to resolve. He just wants to get people on Mars. Whoever wants to make the journey can go. And then we cut over to Miles picking up his spacesuit, which isn't exactly as nice as the other guy's suit. It's the only one available, though, so he goes along with it.
Yeah, that's just. What did you think of Dev's statement? Like, it feels a little glib. You know,
it feels like a soundbite for the press. That's what it feels like.
Yeah,
I don't buy it. I want to see the internal workings here of Helios, and I want to see him get flustered once. Because last time he got flustered, he turned into a real piece of shit. So
yeah, and you know, it's like again. Like anyone can go to Mars. Like, if you don't have any kind of standards or any kind of shared goal or vision, that seems like a recipe for disaster. Because what'll happen is you will self-select for the people who give a shit about give the least amount of shit up for each other. You know, that's going to be the people that survive in that kind of anything goes, I'm not going to take sides type of environment. The side that's willing to be the bigger shits are going to, and to be the loudest screaming voices are going to get their way. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a little glib to be like, this doesn't affect us. We're a multinational corporation. We don't have any interest. We don't have any sides. One form of government's the same as another. Seems kind of crazy. Seems kind of crazy to be that way. But it's very Dev.
Yeah, and it's
it's interesting. This is the only update we got on the Dev Aleta Kelly situation too.
Yeah, that's all on the back burner this episode.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm really torn on this because I don't like. It's hard to say that corporate activism is necessarily good or bad. It really just depends on what their views are and what your views are. Mm-hmm. And if he was taking a more active role in like. This whole thing, it could go either way. You know, maybe Dev is the guy you want leading it. Maybe he's not. Maybe he has some views that are kind of wacky. So
what do you
think
about Miles' reflexive hatred of the guy just because he put, you know, a lot of my buddies out of work?
That's understandable, but it's pretty backward also.
Yeah,
it's like, well, if you know, we have jobs that don't need to be done anymore. Those people are necessarily not going to have jobs. There needs to be a system in place to support them. I think that's like 100%.
Yeah.
But you don't just keep doing old jobs because the people in the jobs need jobs.
Agreed. If there was a better safety net, if people had a nice slow transition to another, you know, on ramp, you know, but like what it feels like happens is like, you know, you're driving down the road and someone fucking airstrikes it and just leaves it to rubble. And then you're like, your car's destroyed. There's no road anymore. And someone comes by and just like, you know, why did you drive into this blasted crater? You know, why didn't you see this coming? Like, why didn't I see the invention of like free fusion coming and helium-3 mining from the moon? Oh, I'm sorry. They didn't cover that in grade school when they're talking about good jobs. Like we don't do enough to help people whose jobs are being displaced.
Yeah, we leave people behind. That's the system we're in. We just say, well, fend for yourself. And that's a joke.
Yeah. And cynically, like I see like increasingly like how cynically coal miners are used in this country in certain areas of the country. It's like, this is such a big, even though it affects less and less people. And that's another job going the way of the dodo, because it's just like, it's not even the cheapest way to make energy. That's the one thing coal always had for it. And now it's been supplanted by natural gas. So why are we still paying people to vanish things, small numbers of people to do this coal stuff? That's super dangerous. It pollutes the environment. Why are we doing it?
It's only because we have ramped up production in other areas yet. That'll happen. Yeah. I mean, the you know, cost incentive alone is going to push it in
that
direction.
Still have politicians this day saying they're going to bring back coal.
That's stupid.
That's not, that's slightly less stupid than saying you're going to bring back whale oil.
Yeah.
But just slightly at this point.
And those people are pandering to...
That's what I'm saying.
To a shrinking audience. It doesn't make any sense from any direction. I don't know why you would ever say something that dumb. But... people do it. I don't get it.
I mean, and that's what I'm saying is, it's not getting black bagged and drug out to a forest and shot, but it's also not a way to make a great nation.
For sure. Yeah. Leaving people behind is crazy. Those people have something to offer and we should embrace it.
There. Maybe the hammers and sickles will give me a week's break.
You won't get hammered this week.
We don't have a flawless form of government, people.
Miles walks out to where Sam found the rock and starts looking around, and he finds an entire mountain of the rocks as this big triumphant score really kicks into effect here. And of course he gets greedy. He reaches for one more it's out of his grasp, and he ends up sliding into a canyon.
This is a commentary on greed, right?
Sure, yeah.
Like, this guy's absolutely walking around at 25 grand in his pocket, and he almost loses it all. Like, this is like a gambler's fallacy. This is a pusher. Like, this is like a little morality play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this could be a child's book. You know, the story of Miles, the rock hound, you know, and his friend Sam.
And it's incredible to me how nonchalant he is about the danger here. Like, forget about walking out onto a tiny piece of rock that isn't supported well and reaching out over a canyon. Just the mere fact that he's walking around unmonitored in a suit on the surface of another planet. Mm-hmm. He's all alone in this operation. Anything goes wrong, he's dead. Anything goes wrong.
Yeah.
This is so incredibly dangerous. Like, 25 grand barely covers the cost of this thing if you're talking about risk.
But that's what, I mean, he's desperate, right? He's like, if I don't do this,
he's not anymore.
I'm going to lose my family.
He's working with Ilya. He's sending shit back. He's greedy now. It's not desperation. It's greed.
You're right.
And I think that's the difference. I think that's why Sam
reacts
differently to
this
episode.
Okay, let me push back a little bit. I think that a person of Miles' position is, like, it's a rational thing to be a little greedy. Because, like, you don't get into, when you're desperate, you get into illegal activities, but then, like, what? As soon as you're current on your bills, you stop? Because
sure.
You're just going to be right back in that situation. You got to, you know, because there is no real safety net. There is no one looking out after you. Like, you got to be able to weather the storms,
you get fuck
man.
You money. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I understand the single-minded acquisition to fuck you money in a capitalist society. I don't know why it goes beyond that. Like, I don't know why anyone works when they have $100 billion of net worth. I don't understand. I don't understand why you fucking won capitalism, baby. Go cash out and spend your time on a private island. Like, why the fuck are you still showing up for board meetings? What the fuck is wrong? But, like, that's probably why I don't have $100 million
in
the bank.
Yeah. Yeah. Maniacally driven.
But, like I think a guy in Miles' position could be forgiven a little bit of greed because you can't just, like, enough
thing.
Is not enough because you got to plan on, like, what if you don't work the rest of your life because you get hurt, or what if your kid, you know, it's like, so I get it, but still, it's another symptom of the divide between the Eds and the Mileses, though, right? Like, Miles is literally standing on the shoulders of Ed. He has no real qualifications or reason to be out there other than companies need his body out there to make money. And because he has no tradition and he has no, like, institutional memory of the dangers and all the lives lost, and because this is just a job for him and he's worked dangerous jobs, he's been out on oil ocean rigs, and that's kind of the same thing, right? He is completely blasé to the dangers. And not just the dangers to him, but the real harm he's putting his home country into with this North Korean stuff and the Russian shit, you know?
Yeah, he's stirring up a lot of potential shit here that he doesn't even understand. So I'm looking at this from Sam's perspective a lot of the time, and why she's reacting to him the way she is. And I think she sees this as greed, right? Like, in her mind, when you have your needs met, you should pull for the other people who don't have their needs met yet, right? Like, she's all about solidarity and unity. And I think that's, like, the perspective she's looking at this from. Hey, you got your needs met. Now you're risking life and limb to go get more. What do you need that for? Why don't you show some solidarity with us around the Vasily stuff, or Vasily, however you say his name. And maybe we can get some movement on that and get treated better overall. And all of our tides can rise a little instead of trying to pack your fucking bags full of expensive moon rocks so you can get cash.
I wonder if the difference between her idealism and Miles' pragmatism is the family, because, like, she's established that she's there by, like, she has no kids. She has no one home, no family even. So she can afford to be kind of, like, a little bit more revolutionary, whereas, like, Miles is like, at the end, my kids got to eat, man.
Yeah, she might be a little better off with this salary than he is.
Even if she's not, like, she's like, you know, the company's not going to drag her out in Mars and kill her. You know, like, she's existing, right? And she's having, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a whole... it's a whole other ball of wax when you got other people depending on you. It's bad enough that you got to worry about you filling your own belly and keeping a roof over your own head, but like when you got smaller mouths to feed, oh my god, it's the pressure goes up that much more.
I can imagine. I don't know. He seems fine taking crazy risks here. And I was thinking, like, when he slides down into this canyon, that's what, 1/3 Earth gravity? He'll be fine.
I was doing that math too. Like, you know, like he's falling 30 feet. That's like falling 10. As long as you don't rip your suit or break, you'll be fine. Yeah.
It might hurt. He's a tough guy, right? You don't work on oil rigs and then not be tough. So, yeah. It turns out he was. Anyway, Sam voices some concern directly to Danielle about the Svetlana situation, her not being sent home. And she says it's just not right. And she thinks Danielle knows it.
And she's right, but because Danielle's a commander, she can't show it. Like, I thought Danielle, even though we know in her heart that she understands this and she's actually stumping for it to Ed, she come across pretty heavy-handed.
At the beginning, definitely.
I've never seen Danny be imperious and heavy-handed, but I think she came across to, like, I don't think that Sam walked away thinking, oh, here's a base commander that understands what the lower decks are going through, even though she does. No.
Yeah, she didn't go away thinking that, but I think what she said to Danielle sunk in, because you can see it later, right?
Yeah, for sure.
In her action.
But I think, I think Danny knew that even before she barged in her office. I just think that Sam's coming out of that with a bad taste in her mouth. And it's too bad, because Danielle might be the hope for change, you know?
Absolutely, she could be.
But I think that's my reading of it, is that no one's going to agree with that.
She kind of gets blindsided by this, Danielle. Like, Sam comes in here with a head of steam and just is, like, at 100 here. And Danielle's just, like, eating her lunch or something. And suddenly hears this person just unloading on her. So I can see, like, why she gets, like, a little defensive at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think it does, you know, have its effect by the end. Yeah, because we're going to see this, right? She goes immediately to visit Vasily in the infirmary. And he's not looking good, but the doc, you know, he's generally optimistic, I'd say. Maybe not on the condition of Vasily, but overall on the base health. He's like, we'll be fine.
And the thing is he's like, we've been through worse, which is literally true. Like, it was way worse when they were stranded on Mars without resupply with a woman with preeclampsia, okay?
Yep.
But you all had dedicated, patriotic people who were capable of pulling together and working for the greater good, like almost on instinct. And not just a few, like the bulk, everyone, with the exception of the bad Danny, was on that board. What do you think that proportion is now? Like, if the topsiders are all the pilots, scientists, and astronauts, and you got 5 below decks full of workers who are probably jammed in. Like, I feel like it's like a 90-10. You got working class people and you've got the elites, and they're not going to be able to carry the day. They're not going to be, no one has the moral authority to get up and be like, all right, people, this is Mars. We all got to come together. We got to do these shared sacrifices. Like, we've always, that's not the Mars of 10 years ago.
And I think now you've got competing interests up there, and I think it's causing huge friction, as we see.
Yeah, I wonder if you're going to have an as above, so below type of things where, like, you're going to have a coup on Mars that is going to mirror a lot the upheaval in the Soviet Union.
I mean, there was a half, you know, there was a soft coup when they changed the alphabet that they were using on the computers, right? I mean,
but that was top down, not bottom up. It's
true, yeah. This is different, but
even the Soviets are afraid of the bottom up. You know, they had one red. There are no more revolutions. The right people are in charge now, comrades, you know?
Sure. Rich tells Sam that Miles isn't back yet. So they go out to search for him and they find him. He's low on O2. He's without radio comms, but they pull him out of the canyon with this big bag of precious rocks and they drive back to the base.
Why is Miles just sitting waiting to die?
I don't know, man. It's 1/3 Earth gravity. He weighs like 50 pounds. Just climb out of there.
Or try to find the other end. Or try to find the other end of the canyon or something. Yeah. Like, he's got no way to communicate with base because his transmitter is. He's just He's going to sit there and wait to die.
Yeah, I guess he shot his shot, man. It didn't work, just, so now he's done.
This is a guy who, like, took no, like, he's willing to risk a North Korean firing line, the harsh surface of Mars, but he doesn't want to walk a few kilometers. Like,
yeah. No, I don't understand why he's just sitting there. And then Sam comes up, starts shoving him. I'm like, watch out. You just had some shit go really wrong because of shoving on the surface of Mars.
Yeah. Maybe my boy and I were watching this. We were both screaming like, oh my God, how many suit rips are we going to get this episode? Right. Holy shit. Can't just go shoving people on Mars. It's serious business.
Yeah. Apparently you can just take rovers out whenever you want, though. Those rovers just in the garage, free use rovers.
Yeah, we pretty much shot our shot on this, but
yeah, we'll see how it shakes
like
out.
There's a believability line between Miles sweet talking and bribing his way into a blue suit, and then Sam unscheduled checking out a whole ass rover and rescuing him and patching him up and doing all that stuff, and nobody call for status, nobody needs any logs filled out. But you're right, they might be met at an airlock with an armed guard, but
maybe.
It felt weird. Like, how many of these fucking rovers they got? Like, even if they had something like 30, it feels like that's not enough that you would just let people just take them, you know, without signing them out.
Yeah, and I can almost guarantee they don't have 30. My guess was 2, but that's like Armageddon rules. I don't know. Maybe they have more than that. I just needed another 2 minutes in this episode just showing how they get this rover. And I think they could have, like, put to rest a lot of my worries.
Yeah.
Maybe Rich could do something to, like, sweet talk the radio guy, give him a pair of boxer briefs or something. And she goes down to the garage and hands out a penthouse. Takes out a rover. There's plenty of ways they could have done it. They just needed to include that. Or they need to arrest them when they get back.
Yeah, like I said, they need to do more legwork to the boost my suspension of disbelief. And there needs to be a consequence because, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm a degenerate shipper. Just talked about that last week. Sam and Miles Meloche here has a moment.
Yes.
I'm typically against shipping people who are already attached, unless there's some abuse, or it's like, oh, that's a bad person they're with and this other person's better. Miles' wife seems like a goddamn saint. Long suffering. I don't feel good about him cheating on her with Sam. I don't feel good for Sam because I don't understand what the fit. Why does Sam see in this guy? This goofy
That's
ass.
The thing. This feels like a
Gomer
high
Pyle
adrenaline moment, right? That's what this feels like. This feels like a moment that is going to be looked back as a mistake.
So it's literally like one of those things where you put people into a high pressure adrenaline situation and it's like a love connection's made. It's all.
I mean, they don't see eye to eye on much.
Not
really.
As evidenced
by this episode. So, yeah, this is like a regret she has tomorrow, you know? When she goes
think.
To visit, hey, will you visit Vasily with me? I gotta grab some more moon rocks.
Right.
God damn it,
right.
I shouldn't have kissed him.
Yeah.
I guess she didn't kiss him, but like,
they, and I know
they
she
came
didn't,
close.
But she wanted to. And
yeah.
Like, I already think that Miles is an idiot, but I thought better of her. And I don't know, like, again, what is this Sylvester Stallone looking motherfucker with the buzz cut? what, how is he pulling? I don't get it. How's he pulling like a tractor?
He's got that
Mars?
Green card, man.
It.
That's all you need, the green
so.
Badge.
I guess
opens
so.
Up a lot of doors.
It's the money. In the end, it's always the money.
All right. Margot, back at Star City, shows Irina the conclusions of her work. And she calls in the author of the accident report. And Margot claims that this report reached the wrong conclusion. Irina accuses him of knowing about the error, which he admits that he knew, but only after the mission was underway. And he accepts responsibility for the error. And then Margot is commended. The other guys escorted out. Margot gets her eyes on a report that she probably wasn't, or maybe definitely was meant to see. This is like a loose thread at the end of this episode. I don't know what's going on there. But then Irina comes back in, gives her an old picture of Sergei as a reward.
What is a dangling thread, though?
It am I supposed to understand what this report is about on the desk? Is she getting a glimpse of the stuff going on with Svetlana? Or is this something else? Because she looks at this folder that's sitting... When Irina leaves the office, she looks at this folder with a picture. And it's upside down, so I couldn't really tell
if that was Svetlana or not. I thought it was the accident report. And it's just kind of making a direct connection between the work that Margot did and this guy getting fired.
Why show that?
Just to make that connection with the audience, that direct connection that like Margot, everything that's about to happen is kind of Margot's fault. Do you think maybe it is something with Svetlana, but like, why would Margot know or care about that?
Well, I don't think she does know or care about it yet. She's seeing breadcrumbs, right? I think like she.
Well, is it just the fact that Margot has access to documents and she's trusted enough that like she turns her back? Like, is this going to be like a reverse espionage situation? Like Margot is starting to realize,
sure,
I could be an asset if I butter up this woman and I get access to high level Soviet secrets and I can like again reverse the flow from the previous seasons.
Seems maybe crazy in the highly monitored internal workings of the Soviet government, but.
And yet sure, spying happened all throughout the Cold War at every level.
By Margot? I don't know if she's equipped for that, man.
I think if Margot went to the KGB, none of this would have happened. Like the Bullfinch, like she brought the Bullfinch, the bulliest Bullfinch to the good KGB, none of this would have happened. Mm-hmm. But I guess Gorbachev
eating crullers and sipping coffee with her newspaper right now.
But I guess Gorbachev was like on the outs at the KGB, so maybe that wouldn't have happened.
KGB.
I'm just saying. I think she should have gone. She should have taken that card to the KGB. None of this would have ever happened.
Yeah, it's Al never Gore a bad idea.
Al Gore would still have won the Cold War.
Fair. I assumed immediately we'll never see this dude again. Gulag for you.
His name is Semenov.
Uh-huh.
Which in Russian literally means son of semen, which is a little reductive, but you know, I mean, you can say that about anybody.
Redundant,
really,
yeah.
Boil it down.
Mm-hmm. You standing here is evidence that that's your name.
Your name is too silly. Dismissed.
I love this. The whole reason that this mix-up happened with the bolts and stuff, because they're using a different measurement system.
Is this a reference to the real life NASA EU fuck up?
Gotta be. Yeah.
NASA was using feet and the EU
was
using
first thing I thought of
meters, and we ended up plowing a $1 billion lander into Mars because it deployed its retro rockets at the wrong altitude.
Yeah, gotta be, right? I love it.
That makes perfect sense.
And this whole thing here that they do at the end with the poem. This is really shining a light on Margot's love for space, I guess, because here this is supposed to be a love for a person, but I think what they're doing is saying that Margot just really loves the work that she was doing. And, you know, it's kind of sickening to her that she got mixed up in all this politics stuff. And I know that she's about to give Sergei the Sergei photo, but Sergei's Margot's love, or is the work Margot's love?
I think that you could interpret that way, but I think it's clearly Sergei, because if you read this Pushkin poem, it's all about, you know, like it's talking about a person living in exile, that they have no more tears, no more love, no more passion, and then the love of their life walks back into their life, and it's like, you know,
well, but
all
the same thing is happening with her work, right? She was exiled there in Russia.
Her a picture of Sergei. Like, I think that's. But the thing is I don't know what game the Bullfinch is playing, because it feels like she's. Mm-hmm. It feels like she is radicalizing Margot unintentionally.
Sure, but well,
like.
Remember your boyfriend that we
did the bait and switch on you, and
the same
we
thing heavy
handed
you,
and we tried to choke him up and all that kind of stuff. And remember how we took him away? It's a really weird arch supervillain way to keep an underling in line. But I feel like the Bullfinch thinks she's doing the Lord's work here. You know, she's like, nah, no notes, perfect. I got Margot right where I need her.
She's killing the golden goose, you know. If If her idea is that Margot's going, the golden bullfinch, she's killing it. If Margot's going to be the outsider perspective they need, the unflinching source of truth and honesty, you can't have her jumping at her own shadow. And yet that's exactly where she's pushing her. So
yeah,
I'm with you.
You don't
man.
Want your employees to flinch. Don't act like you're going to hit them in the face all the time and then give them two for flinching. Like,
and maybe pay for the coffee. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. You will train yourself to be flinchy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hobson is working out at home, and he freaks out at his exercise bike, starts telling it to shut the fuck up. His wife comes in. He admits to her, yeah, the stress might be getting to me a little. And she gives him a pep talk and promises that he promises he'll only be in this job for a few more years, and then they can go on vacation. She mentions maybe going to India, which sparks an idea in his head, so he heads back to work.
I like it. Like I said, Marv is funny.
Mm-hmm.
The pace was pretty funny. And I always like an organic. Sometimes these things feel a little forced, but like this, I didn't even know what the hell they were talking about, you know? Like, it's like, India, how's this going to help? And then the way it worked, it's like, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Makes sense in the geopolitics.
Yeah, we're going to kind of skip all the inner workings of how that goes down. But Danielle and Ed are talking about the news here in the next scene. And she's apparently, Svetlana's going to be shipped back to India, the only neutral country in the M7 to stand trial. Danielle's already signed off on it, which, man, that pisses off Ed. They both say that, oh, this reaction is so typical of you for various reasons. But Danielle's made up her mind. She's going along with this.
They're fucking with us at this point.
How so?
Right? Because it's like, you know, Danielle corks off in this litany against Ed, and is well-deserved, mm-hmm. richly deserved.
She's right.
I like Ed, one of my favorite characters, but Danielle is right, with a capital R. And she's righteous, same capitalization. And she's like, this is just like Gordo and Danny. And he's like, oh, what about Danny? He's like, well, you let your emotions get the better of you. And because of that, and then Ed looks right in the camera and says, he what? I'm like, yes.
Say it.
What?
Say it,
I would like to know. I can handle the truth. I think I'm entitled to it. I would like to know what the fuck. Are they going to keep stirring? Is this going to be just like an in joke where it's like, because it makes perfect sense in universe for these people to never talk about it. They went through it. Why the fuck would they? They don't need to.
And it was traumatic for them. And sure. Lots of reasons. Yeah,
but like as an audience, I feel like I'm getting fucked with.
But I also feel like I know, like Danny's dead. I mean, he didn't, the end of that sentence isn't.
You know nothing.
And that's when Danny went off with the Martians to their colony. Like, what are the results of like exiling somebody into a capsule? They probably killed themselves. In Danny's
jail, he could kill him. Yeah, I think you're right, but like the fact that no one's saying it is, I think, a little funny.
Oh, I agree. They're teasing us for sure.
Yeah, and I like how they did. I thought Kinnaman did a good job with the whole, you know, she's important to the base and she's important to the asteroid program and she's like important to everybody. Can't act say like she's important to me, Danielle. She's important to me.
And, like, that's the thing. It's weird with Ed, right? Because, like, they have so much history together, him and Danielle.
They do.
And, like, I look at this relationship and how it's kind of, I guess, cooled. And in its place, Ed has taken up relationships with other people. And those are taking priority here. Because, my God, when he's talking about, like, when he gets so heated here, I'm like, you guys go way back. Why are you throwing all this vitriol at this person to defend somebody you've only known for a few years, maybe? But it's recency bias. It's like, this is the relationship. This is the thing he's feeling now. And his connection with Danny is kind of on, you know, that's history at the moment.
And I got to say, I think he's always taken Danielle for granted. Like,
yeah,
the fact that he would ever question her personal loyalty to the space program, to him, to her crewmates, after she broke her fucking arm to cover Gordo's space madness, that's the definition of ride or die.
And risked everything to shake hands with the Russians in a time where that was frowned upon. Yeah,
it's fucking ridiculous that Ed is being this chesty with her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's why I'm 100% on Danielle's side here. She is winning this argument without a doubt.
Yeah.
Because it's absolutely true of Ed. He does defend the people that he is close to above all else.
I hope he Rikers up here, because I do not think it's fun to watch Ed completely fucking, not appreciate Dan. Like, I want them to be Picard mm-hmm. and Riker. Like I said, the earlier scene where it's like they that ready room scene that works so well. I do not want to see this house divided. Like, Ed, fucking for Christ's sake, get your head out of your ass and fall in line behind your commander. God damn.
Yeah. Ed has a tough time with that. And we saw this coming, right? I mean, that first discussion they had.
But see, if I'm being really real, I still think Ed secretly sees Danielle as a diversity hire.
That's possible.
Like, it goes all the way back to you guys took a short. Yeah, I do, but I really think, like, when you look at her, when you look at the way they interact, there's a lot of warmth, a lot of history, a lot of friendship, but there is also a little bit of that where he's like, you cut in line. You didn't earn it.
Yeah. Which is
a
shame.
You also might not have it. You might not also have it deep down. You might not have that command like ability. I think a little bit.
Yeah, you would think everything he'd seen from her would.
I mean, how many fucking times has he second guessed an order she's given? Like every time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he does. He second guesses orders. But I think you're right.
You're right. It's not like he just rebels against Danielle's orders. But still, Jesus.
Still. No, I'm with you here, man.
If Molly Cobb was the base commander, she would not be getting this shit. 100%.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because she would have put his ass out an airlock like the second time he questioned his orders, probably. True. But
yeah. Margo gets some food in the cafeteria, where she runs into Tatiana, who's alone at a table, and she's crying because the KGB took her mentor, this seaman son of a seaman.
Mm-hmm.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad. Touchdown, and we're back. Yeah, I talked about the parallels between Von Braun and this guy for Margo here. So...
Yeah, that was a great piece of analysis, because I didn't even fully realize like the amount of craptitude that Margo is feeling about herself here. But yeah, I forgot the fact that like this is something she can tensely relate to. And when she's saying they make cowards out of all of us, even me, like this now includes Margo, because Margo is working for this instrument of the state. Arguably, Margo's cowardice at key points in later seasons is why she's here in the first place. Mm-hmm. Her like arrogance and like fear and like as I said, it's like you got to be built different to spit in the face of an authoritarian regime, man.
Yeah,
like we talk about this every time, like in Narcos, where it's like you're the one politician that tells Pablo Escobar where you can stick his bribes,
mm-hmm.
and you get your tongue pulled out through your neck. Like, you got to be and you got to just willingly sacrifice potentially your entire life on the chance that maybe some change will happen or enough people will stand up. Because that's the thing.
And
it's
the next person in line will do the same.
Because there's not enough KGB. There's not enough secret police. There's not enough stooges and goons to ever keep a whole country down. It's just a fear. Like, if everyone stands up, like if, you know, cop goes to make a bad arrest and the whole neighborhood be like, no, fuck you, not like that arrest doesn't get made. So there's always a little element mm-hmm. of like, and that's how these also work, because there's you make people complicit.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest part. Once you make a person complicit, it's going to get easier and easier and easier for them to go along. And it's sad. It's sad. And it's tragic. And Margo's feeling it.
And then Arena starts the daily meeting without son of a seaman. With an announcement that Svetlana will stand trial in India.
Vacant chair, and Margo's staring lasers at it.
Yeah, for sure. Then we go back up to Happy Valley, where Ed offers to hide Svetlana in the base. This would never work. This Martian base is too small, but she turns down the offer because it's a stupid one and gives him a kiss.
Is it so? Is like. my idea for this is that if they can hide her for like a couple of days, that's enough that, like, what are you going to do? Hold the whole Martian transport?
Like, okay,
that thing,
yeah,
that
and
thing
then they
has
have months,
to go,
right?
And there's not, like, yeah, then they'd have a couple months in between, and there's enough. But like, the fact that Ed is going to full-on mutiny,
yeah,
that's what this is. That's what this is. This is another house divided. We've been talking about the Russians, but ooh, it doesn't look good on the western side of the base either.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Like, Svetlana is the cooler head that prevails here.
Yep. She kisses him before the guards knock on the door, and then he walks her down to the Unity through the crowd that has gathered to see her off. Some for and some against this outcome, I would think.
Yeah, I was... it's a good scene. Like, you really get an idea of how divided the base is, because it's not just the Russians staring daggers at her. Some of them are pretty sympathetic. It's not just the Helios employees. It's just... What I got looking out over this is, like, how in the world would you know who your friends are?
Yeah.
Because there's, like, the loudmouths that are talking about the politics all the time, but there's the 90% that are just listening. And you have no idea how that's going to break. You have no idea how people are really thinking.
And I think that shows, like, the challenge that Danielle's facing, right?
Yes.
Especially with the class divide here, with not living in the same space as these people, not talking with them over lunch each day, right? She's not going to get the temperature. She might get a general feel, but she's not going to get the details she needs to know to run this base.
Yeah, I just wonder when the real civil disobedience are going to... So when does sabotage? When does the slow work? When did the strikes and the protests?
Mm-hmm.
Violence? Into, like, when, yeah, it's all scary.
The other thing that the scene does really well is gives Ed a moment to really play up here. Like, I felt for him as he's walking Svetlana out. He's doing a very tough thing here. He's saying goodbye in a pretty dramatic way. And his performance there really carries it. I felt like Joel did a great job.
Yeah, very strong people going with some strong emotions. But they're the only way they're going to show it is a little bit of lids rimmed with tears. Eyelids rimmed with ears.
That felt very Ed, for sure. And that's the end of the episode.
And I also did not like him shoulder checking Danny.
It wasn't. I was watching for that. It wasn't a hard check. Riker
would never, and Picard would never. Can you imagine Riker shoulder, like, even lightly shoulder checking Picard on the way out of a ready room? Are you fucking kidding me?
He'd the full. Airlock.
He'd bring out the harums that he reserves for Beverly, unzipping her unitard. Like, yeah, he would not. The stiffest upper lip would be deployed against Riker, and he would fall in line.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I don't know that I've ever seen Riker touch Picard. Period. Physical contact. I don't think it's ever happened.
Seen it happen a few slash fix, but yeah, on the actual canon proper.
Sure. That's it, man. Good episode, yeah. I think. We'll see how it all shakes out next time. But
fuck you, Ed. Don't shoulder check Danny.
Yeah.
Shall we do some feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
FAM at baldmove.com. Before that, if you are wondering how to find what we're doing at Bald Move, because we're starting a Christmas season, we got a whole bunch of cool Christmas stuff we're talking about. Christmas movie review, Scrooged. Love Actually, I almost said For All Email Kind. You've got all the email. You've got email. Mm-hmm. You've got mail. That's it. That's the name of the movie. We're going to be doing.
Says send more Martian rocks.
See, we're doing Fargo and For All Mankind. We got a lot of cool stuff for next year. House of the Dragon is going to be coming up in the spring or maybe early summer. How do you follow along with all that? We're at Bald Move everywhere except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move there. And if you'd like to get ad-free feeds and bonus audio content, all that Christmas, all those Christmas movie podcasts exclusively for our club members, find out how to support us at support.baldmove.com. All right, FAM at baldmove.com. First up is Leela from New Zealand. So you guys were pondering how old Ed was. My thinking is he's probably in the 65 to 70 year range. Ed served in Korea. Korea in real life was in 1950 through 1953. Assuming the same timeline here, Ed was part of the early Mercury program in the 60s, so he must have been born in the early 30s to serve in Korea post or during his training in, she says Indianapolis, but I think this might be a mishearing of Annapolis, the Naval Academy. So he'd be 18 to 23 in the early 50s, and in 2002 in Mars, he's going to be at least 65. I actually crunched the math. I think the lower limit for his age, like, he had to be 18 in 1953 to legally participate in the last year of the war. So that would make him 67 in 2002. But we also know he went to Annapolis, and he would have not gotten his wings and served before then, and that's a four-year term. Unless they defer that in wartime, maybe. But if that's the case, then he'd be 22 at a minimum flying in Korea, which would put him at 71. Again, that's the youngest. If he was serving from the beginning of the war, then you're easily like at 75 plus. So when they say old man of Mars, they mean it. He's late 60s at the youngest. She says, also, I'm finding there's a lot less LGBT in this season. I'm wondering how that will manifest, as it's a theme that's been carried through the prior three seasons. I wonder if they just feel like they're done with that arc. We have gay people still on the show. Will made an appearance as part of the senior staff of NASA in the Earthbound Ready Room scene. But, like, I think in America, like, we are just 20 years ahead of where we're at in terms of LGBT acceptance. I guess they haven't explicitly talked about trans people on the show, but, like,
sure.
It seems like those kind of rights seem to move forward in blocks and advance like that, you know, because of the alliance. So they might just be done. They might have just made the point about, like,
yeah,
you know, you start taking apart the patriarchy a little bit at a time, and the dominoes all kind of fall with it. You break down the barriers for women, that you break down the barriers for minorities. Other minorities can make, because it's the same argument, you know, like, why not us? Why not us? What's wrong with us? What's really wrong with us? Yeah. So they might just be done making that point. I don't know.
And they got a lot of points to make on this show if we're going to get to the Star Trek utopia style society. Right. You have to get past the concept of ownership, which I feel like is a pretty ingrained one.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough. So a lot of ground to cover. And I think they said what they wanted to say on that topic. So,
and like I said, I
and now it's just,
I'm not sure we're
life.
Done with Ellen either. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Ellen makes an appearance later on, and we still have Will, but yeah, since, you know, I guess I would have to agree that there's been a little bit of a backseat there. Eric, our resident NASA guy, said it would be highly unusual for someone of Leida's age to become a flight director. While she's excellent at her job and very smart at NASA, pretty much everyone is excellent at their job and very smart.
True.
The people in these types of positions tend to be highly experienced folks with many years of experience in a variety of jobs that have prepared them for the position. In addition, they need to have good leadership skills, which I don't think we've seen from Aleda. Being exceptional in one particular area does not position you for something like flight director. I'd also argue that Margo was probably not the right person either when she was hired into the job, but she grew into it. But then again, it's just a TV show. So last episode, from an in-universe perspective, a guy, I guess if you think that Bill is a judge of character, his position was he was shocked that she had not made flight director yet. And I'm trying to think, do I agree that she hasn't shown leadership skills? I actually think her brokering peace between her and Bill was a very good indication that she could be a good leader. You know, someone that can swallow their pride, admit that they're wrong, humble themselves to come to someone and work out a personal beef. But you're right. I'm more agreeing with you than not. I'm just also saying that, like, the show's opinion seems to be she should have been flight director.
Yeah, her friend's opinion.
Yeah. That's true. And
take,
like,
it with
also
a bit of a grain of salt there.
Also, Bill is one of the kind of, I would say, the underdogs of NASA. You know? So maybe he's a little bit more inclined to, like, stump for his friend or, like, buck her up maybe a little bit.
Maybe.
Anyway, Luke says, just want to throw out a fun little connection between Lost and For All Mankind. The surfer who called Dev a fascist pig in the beach is actress Tonya Raymond, who played Alex Rousseau, the daughter of French woman Danielle Rousseau on Jim's favorite show, Lost.
My favorite show? Yeah.
Glad to see her in another plucky role in one of my favorite shows. Lost truly brings all shows together and in. What? How old is she? Because I thought she was like in her early 20s, but on she Lost? Surely wasn't like 7 on Lost. Like, what?
No.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, that's cool.
45-year-old hippie surfer. Okie Paul says, I'm loving the new season and your coverage, but there's a missing element in the show's timeline that bugs me. Hip-hop and rap. Where's Tupac, Biggie, Puff Daddy, Outkast, Jay-Z, or Wu-Tang? Not a mention of the Beastie Boys or Eminem. Have I missed a reference? It's not detracting from the story, but it feels a bit jarring to not have hip-hop culture represented at all. What are your thoughts on this, and are there any missing elements in their timeline that have bothered you?
Yeah, it's the turntable was never invented. You know, the Russians beat us to space, and instead of stopping the space program and inventing turntables, we had to focus on space.
Yeah, it turns out jazz is where all this is a good point, because I don't understand. Are they saying that, like, Danielle becoming an astronaut increased race relations so much that you didn't have like a crack epidemic and the rise of gangster rap, and like is like that, like, and is it a utopia if you don't have rap?
Could certainly make an argument that it's not.
Is it all conscious style hip hop, or there's none of the gangbanging stuff? I don't know. It is, now that you pointed out, like, you have you know, Clint Eastwood has a rap in it, but that seems like you're trying to smuggle it in a side entrance. Like, you should just roll in the front door, man.
Yeah, we need some 50 Cent. We need some Jay-Z. I mean,
something.
We're in the era where, yeah, we should definitely be hearing that stuff.
Yeah, like, it's one thing when Star Trek does nothing but, you know, like no one's ever a fan of 20th century pop culture.
No,
21st
it's all
century.
Classical.
Never, right? You know, Geordi's never just like sitting listening to NWA in his quarters. It's always like Brahms and it's all about Brahms with him, isn't it? No, it's all about Bach and Beethoven and Shakespeare and all the highfalutin bullshit. But this show, yeah, like we need to get some hip hop and R&B in here. David says, "Hi, Bob." Hi, Bob. Just want to say how much I enjoy all the threads in the show. It's so much more interesting to have a timeline that is this close to our own. I long for Gene Roddenberry's utopian future, and who wouldn't? But this feels way more realistic. I love something that engages science and morality and politics. Fantastic program. I hate Apple in principle, but their TV department is knocking out of the park. Anyway, thanks for pods without them. I would never have discovered this show or Severance. Ooh. We're going to do Severance upright when it comes back, by the way.
Absolutely.
I know we haven't talked about it a lot, but me and Jim fucking love Severance, and I cannot wait to give it the full treatment. In fact, I think our latest thought is we're going to go back and cover the first season in the lead up to season 2.
I'd really like to, yeah. Both as a refresher for myself and just have full coverage of it for everybody.
Because I don't think I could do the show justice if I didn't do full coverage to get it all straight in my brain. Great show, and Apple is just killing it in science fiction, I think.
Yep.
And also, as far as the Gene Roddenberry's utopian future of it all, don't forget that Gene Roddenberry's actually, he foresaw the world going through a cataclysm of like World War III, eugenics wars, and like we had the same way that Europe had to get sick of killing each other for like 1,000 years before they became the EU. Like, we had to do that across the globe before we were ready to join. And also maybe the Vulcans. Like, if first contact hadn't happened and we had missed that boat, does the species make it out of the 22nd century? I don't know. So, yeah, Gene, it didn't come for free, that's for sure. Michael says, I'm still catching up on prior seasons, but I started it with season 4. I was wondering if it came up before how many people in Happy Valley are in Ed or Danny's position versus Miles. The way they presented it didn't seem right to me. With all the upfront costs, I think Helios would try to limit the number of employees as much as possible and then not argue about pay with the employees that are needed. Let's take this first. I thought like maybe 90-10 for like the quote-unquote elite scientists, pilot, astronauts versus the grunts. If you just go by levels, you've got one level for the elites and three levels two that are under construction for the asteroid program. So that's like a 3-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's that's also saying that the topside people have the same population density as the lower decks people, and I guarantee they don't.
Yeah, they're not sleeping in bunks four to a room.
Right. They got their own space. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's at least 3-to-1, if not much higher. And also about with the upfront costs, I think Helios would try to limit the number of employees as much as possible. I've worked in enough big companies where I've seen departments get the raw materials ready for a manufacturing process that was not even close to being done. Like, I totally believe that Helios would fully ship the people anticipating that the asteroid program is being a success and they can instantly make money. Like, they never plan for the failure. They always go for the success, because when they fail at big enough scale, they get bailed out for it.
Sure. And they're trying to maximize profit, and time equals cost. So
they strand 500 people on Mars, like in substandard living conditions. Your average person on Earth is not going to give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be like, oh, I'd trade positions with them tomorrow in a heartbeat, right?
Yeah.
If Helios...
Ed's dialogue about being grateful and, yeah.
If Helios' stock goes down 30% and it jeopardizes the energy security of the United States, shit will get done. So you see how that works? So yeah, I think that seems very in line with how a company would view this.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They expected the asteroid capture program to be in full operation. Mm-hmm. And now they got a bunch of people who probably don't have much to do, which is why Ilias is bumping, right?
You're right. And, you know, it's like, yeah, like NASA wouldn't do it that way. NASA would do the slow, careful, measured growth, test. Then, you know, once you prove the capability, expand into it. That's not how the private sector works, because mm-hmm. that company would have their lunch eaten by the company that's YOLOing.
Yeah, and there would be 50 other companies YOLOing, and one of them would hit, and that's all it takes to beat NASA, right? So
yeah, that's why you want to be first to market.
And the other 49 would crash, but it doesn't matter because one got through.
Also, Miles is working HVAC on Mars. Wouldn't airflow be one of their biggest concerns? Why would Helios go out of the way to antagonize an HVAC mechanic? Wouldn't it be worth a little more in a paycheck after they already paid for all the upfront training costs? Why would Hollywood go out of their way to antagonize the actors and writers and directors that make the product that they make billions of dollars off of?
Mm-hmm.
Why would an offshore oil rig try to screw? Why would a company that's making millions of dollars off pollock and cod and all that? Why would they pay guys that spend a month on their ship $1.50 when they get? I mean, it's like, I don't know. I honestly don't know, because it's insane. It's insane from any kind of like sober analysis, but.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, we talked about, you know, the parallels between the Russian government and the American government here. And it's the same thing. Like, why, if you want honesty and truth from your employees, why would you make them feel like they have to jump at their own shadow? Yeah, it's insane. It's Kafkaesque, right? Like this. Yeah. Ridiculous, these ideas that they have of a way to run an operation just grind up the employees, but I guess there's always another person willing to go to Mars to be ground up.
Yeah, and it's like you have to have like, so a good example of how to stop this is like you look at Norway and how strong their public sector is. And right now, like, I don't know if you paid attention to this, but like I think it's Norway, it might be Finland, it's one of these Nordic countries that got shit figured out. You know, Tesla is one of a disruptive company, right? They don't want to do dealerships. They don't want to give their workers fair protections. And like they go into this country, Norway, the land of unions, and they think, oh, well, we're going to bust up this, you know, we're going to disrupt the shit out of stuff. But in Norway, it's not just like the auto union you have to work with. Like now, like you cannot get your license. You cannot get your Tesla licensed in Norway. Because you have to get your license plate shipped through the mail, and the postal workers union refuses to carry Tesla's mail.
Hmm.
So it's like, it's amazing what you can get done if every citizen links arms and says, fuck you, there's 10 of us for every, well, there's 100, 1,000 of us for every one of you, and this is not right, we're going to stand against it.
And we're the ones actually doing the work. We make the things that you depend on to make your money.
We don't have that culture in this country. Russia doesn't have that culture in their country.
You got mine. That's our culture.
Until the top 10 countries in the world have that kind of culture, we're going to be stuck with this. Like, why does this happen? Why do brands that do things right get bought up by venture capitalists and have that brand ran into the ground? You know,
why is Amazon having to rehire people that they fired for poor performance? Because they've run through the entire job pool. They've ground everybody into dust, and now all they're left with is dust to hire. So, they're cannibalizing themselves. The snake eating its tail is eating a little faster than it's fleeing.
That's why you need regulation for these companies, because like they can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. They can't help but make short-sighted, stupid decisions. And unless you put the proper tracks and guardrails on that process, it's going to always lead to carnage. Yep. So,
100%.
Anyway. FAM at baldmove.com. Whether you're a boomer that's pissed or a sickle and flag for all mankind, FAM at baldmove.com. Let us know what you think. We'll see if Miles and Sam are met with handcuffs and arms at the airlock next episode. If not,
we can only hope.
Might have some splaining to do for all mankind. We'll see. See you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.